Accession number 11032, rule 5.
So, when you went over with your crane, following the destroyer, would this have been on D-Day itself?
It would be on D-Day itself, exactly on D-Day.
The date would have been...
Yes, and I suppose I got over to Ellen Manches about 11 o'clock.
And what was the scene when you arrived there?
When I got there, the warspite wasn't there. They'd have done all that. The barber was all finished, and when I went ashore, I see where a lot of them had got injured. You know, the men that had gone flying over.
The gliders?
The gliders, that's right. I see them. And when I went ashore, how much is that it coming on now? When I went there, I was surprised out of my life. I said to myself, oh, this is a lot better than Gallipoli, because I was in that war. And there was these four ships, and Jerry couldn't do no harm to the harbour. They were sunk. And we went in between these two ships, and I was so pleased. When I went inside there, I come to all my old countrymen, the Malatamen, and all the barges was there, and I spoke their language, and I said, we're tying up there. They said, no, you can't tie up there. I said, you look out of it, we can push you out of it anywhere. So we tied up there, and then at night time it was blacked out. It was blacked out every night. Terrible.
What happened to your crane?
Eh?
What happened to the crane?
We didn't do nothing to the crane. We stopped there. And in the morning, myself, I was cocky because I had three stripes. And ashore I go. And when I go ashore, there's a great big van there for serving up the food. And I joined up with them, because we could not fire upon our boat. And I lined up behind a brigadier or somebody great. That was wonderful. We couldn't do that in the First World War. And I had my breakfast off of them in my hand. I had no gear, because only the soldiers got that. We didn't get it because we was on there. And they gave me tin and knife and fork, the same as a soldier has. And then when I had that, I was given a rifle with all the other men that was building the Mulberry Harbour, isn't it? That's what it's called. They were all building the Mulberry Harbour. They were all given a rifle, and we're going to march to Cannes. When we get halfway there, there's another big restaurant that the government have taken over with the people, and they've gave them tea, sugar and milk and all that, so that they can give the boys a cup of tea, and that cheered us all up. And they've still kept that going, so I read in the paper, and they're going to keep it going for that reason. So I'm in that. And then when I didn't get as far as Cannes, but it was in case anybody, we all had our rifles in, and we had to watch for mines. And in case anybody was firing at us, that's why we all had our rifles. And then I came back, and my son was at Cannes fighting this one. So I had two sons and myself in France. There ain't many had that. Has a one bombarding in the Navy. And I thought of that as a good thing. And then when I came back, I carried on at work. And then in the meantime, there's a great big thing that got damaged. and we had to lift it out with our big crane. It lifted 100 ton, and when we lifted it from the top, we was two blocks, couldn't lift it, and it wasn't out of the dirt, it wasn't out of the bottom. That's where jet gearing comes in again. I'd get all the soldiers I can, or I'd have a thick chain, 6-inch chain, and I got all the soldiers to go down the hole and pull it all up, and we all pulled it up and we put it round it twice that, and put wood there so it wouldn't slip, and then I got it ready so they can make a second lift. But I had to be careful. In the meantime, the people that mattered didn't know there was a man like me. They sent for the Admiralty. And the Admiralty come down. That sergeant's doing a good job of work. You don't want me, leave it to him.
And where was all this happening?
This is happening in Gerlach, in the Mulberry Harbour, where all the troops are going to march across. They're wanting that done so that they can fetch all the more troops to put ashore quick. And that's, we gave it a lift, and that can go back to England, and they can put a new one in. And we carried on like that, doing different jobs. And then one day, the blackout was all finished, you know, it only lasted a week. And one day, an American comes there, a cook, with a lot of American soldiers.
Where is this?
It's still in Gerlach, it's still in Mulberry Harbour.
In Gerlach?
No, not Gerlach. No,
In France. Yes, you did say Gerlach.
Oh, no,
as if
I know.
You were preparing.
I made a mistake.
So what part of France was this now?
It was in Arimanches.
You're still there.
Arimanches,
yes.
We're still there, and we're ashore, and along comes a man with all the food for the Americans and our men as well. And they put it in a deck where I had a big storage, and they put it all in there, and the man shut it up, and he went away, and they're waiting badly for me. I don't know. I went on some business I had to go on, and when I come back, I didn't know nothing about that. In comes this cook of the Americans, and said, "I put all our food in there. We're going to help the Americans in there on their beach, because we had a heavy lifting crane." And he said, all the food's gone. I said, "Oh, I know where that's gone." I said, "I know where that is going. I'll get it all back." I said, "Don't worry." So I see it myself, all empty. I go down to the cabin where my men were. I said, "Go and put it all back." That's all I said. "Don't be daft," I said. "We're going to live like fighting cocks. Go and put it all back at once," I said. I never told the captain, I never told nobody. I'd done it all on my own, because I know it's the best way to do it. And I went down to the fireman, you know, because it was cold. It was still steam, cold, no petrol. And I told them the same. I said, "Go and put it all back." And they put dead cartons of cigarettes. And I said, "Put it back, make it as good as yourself back, and put it all." They put everything back, tins of chicken, tins of this and tins of that, all had it under their beds.
Sounds if the Americans had a lot of food.
Yes. Mm. So,
but can you tell me about the building of the Mulberry Harbour, what you saw of that?
That was a marvellous thing. That was marvellous. In the middle of the harbour, they had these lighters, and they went over with great big anchors on these, so they can make a permanent mooring, and they made a permanent mooring, and then all round the harbour was just like it would be at Greenwich or anywhere else. You know, there was houses and all that, and I had to walk right round the town there, and there were some ships that was damaged, you know, and I see one with a man down there, you know, down the old drowned, you know, got torpedoed or got shelled or something.
Was there much devastation as well? Much destruction? Was there a lot of bombing?
I didn't see a lot of destruction, no. I didn't see a lot. I see where as far as you could see, where the ships had knocked out, where the bombardment was all there, all at the back. But in the front, there was, you know, just like ordinary. Or else it was all cleared away. But anyhow, it was very, very clear. But a long way away, you could see where the Navy had been bombarding terrible. You know, a long way away, knocking property down, everything. And then when they thought it was good enough, the Navy went out of it. They weren't there when I went over. They was gone.
How long did it take to get the Mulberry Harbour built, do you think?
They was towing the parts over, shoulders of concrete, all floating, all hollow in the middle, towing them all over all the time I was there, fixing them up in different places. And I just say it took about a week to get it perfect. You know, and then they had it perfect for coming in, perfect. And then don't forget they had, what did they call that name when the petrol come over?
The Pluto, was it?
That's right.
Pluto.
That's
did
right.
Did you see that, Carl?
Yes, I see that. And then when that harbour was done, well, when I told these men, they put my men and they put all the food back. I said, that's right. I see this, I found out the cook in the Navy and the Army are the highest paid men. And he said, that's all right now, we'll go to work. Mm. And I had a proper captain then, he was named Luard, Captain Luard. And his father was an Admiral Luard, and this was his son. And he stuttered a lot, and he very bad, and I was a great help to him in talking and all that.
How about Pluto? Tell me about Pluto.
I didn't know much about that.
Yes.
I don't, only that it floated and sunk.
You saw that, did you?
Yeah, I've seen that. Oh, yes, yes. And that come in. Yes, at different points.
Yes, that must have taken tremendous organisation.
It was. We had from Dunkirk right up to the landing out there, nearly 3 years preparing, didn't we?
And you saw that, did you?
I see
years?
All that. Yeah. Oh, it was a marvellous. The organiser. If we'd have done that with the Dardanelles, we'd have been straight away. They learnt from the Dardanelles. They learnt from that. They learnt from all that. They was well organised. Perfect organisation was grand.
Yeah. But when you went to France on D-Day, did you know that it was the invasion that you were
I knew
going
it was
on?
D-Day, I knew it was the invasion.
Yes, when did you know that?
I know that in the morning when I got it ready for sea. When I got it ready from sea, I knew it because of.
And you went from Cardiff, did you?
I put her out a long while before D-Day. Mm. When I went to Cardiff, I took her off of a civilian. He taught me how to go up 108 foot high. And don't forget, I was an old man myself then. But being used to it, so I went up with him. And he said, your job is to oil these wheels up here. So that's my job. You know, I mean the deck's job. I didn't do it, I took men up there and made them do it. But then, when it was time for us to go and help the Americans, I had all these Americans, and they slept down there, made extra bunks, and they slept down where my men was. I suppose there was about 10 of them. And the cook. And our cook cooked all the. They had a great big steel like that, not a frying pan, thick steel. And then they make that, and then they do the blackjacks, as they call them. And we live like fighting cocks with them. And round we go to their beach at near where. Well, anyhow, we go to their beach. And when we go to their beach, my men, I told them that to do nothing and say nothing, only to tell us what they wanted lifted. And they'd done it all themselves. They lifted all the different things out of it and got the beach all clear with our big heavy lifting crane, same as we helped it with our building our American harbour. And that's how I worked with the Americans. And they chummed up with our men and they had plenty of cigarettes. So, and I told this man, I said, our men only get 3 cigarettes a day. I said, it's a great temptation for them. And when we was at Gerlach, we worked with the Americans, and the Americans put them on rafts. All their ship, all their lorries went on rafts. And when I was there, I went aboard one of them, and there was they're different to our. Say they put 10 lorries on a raft, the other nine men ago, I only leave one to take them off. Different to us. All our men have to stop there. English drivers would. But that's different. That's the way they work. I like the way they work.
Yes, you seem to like the Americans.
Oh, I did. And when I was with him, there was, and I had about 6 REs with me, the same as myself. Though I was a corporal. So I said, all your stuff? He said, yeah, it's all ready for landing. All that cigarettes, all that drinks and all that, it's all ready for landing. I said, oh, is it? I didn't say nothing to him. Round I go again, put it all back. Again, see? Put it all back.
Well, I shall have to end this soon because we're running out of tape.
Oh, I know.
But could you tell me, you know, you've served in 2 world wars.
Yeah.
It's, it must have, obviously you were much older in World War Two.
Well,
but do you
World
think
War
the
III.
War, World War was very different, those two
well,
wars?
Well, to me it was. I thought the Second World War was a bit of cake to what I've had out in Gallipoli. Because I told you, all the poor soldiers in Gallipoli, when you went to work in France in the Great War, you had a great big landing. But the poor chaps, when they come to land in Gallipoli, they're going to take a mountain. No comfort, none at all. None at all. It was terrible. And it wasn't. They didn't get anything nice, not until they got to Suvla Bay.
And you've also indicated that perhaps there was less difference between the officers and the men.
Yes.
Am I right in thinking that?
You're quite right. The officers was a lot more better in the Second World War, all of them. In the First World War, I was at Malta, you know, when we had to get John, one of my mates, a good mate of mine, and another man had done 20 years in the Navy. Him and my mate were travelling on a buggy, you know, with the horse buggy. And 2 drunken officers come along there at Malta, stop the buggy. Along comes the naval people, because when in the Navy, whether you're at Chatham or whatever, they have men go around. And every sailor's got a truncheon to keep order. And they come in and they interfered. Anyhow, the officers drove around in it, and these 2 men got locked up. One man, my mate, he got 46 days in the glasshouse. That's through a silly officers, drunken officers. They never drunk. There was 2 decent men. And the other one, he was crying to me because he said to me in my mess, he said, I've only got another year to do and I'll get the long service medal. I'll lose it right at the last like that. And these were only officers that had joined up for the war. They weren't regular officers. It's the officers that's joined up for the war that was the trouble.
And what had they done? You haven't explained what the officers had done to
cause this trouble. What the officers had done, They stopped this man, which they had no business to, and he was a frightened of them. He stopped his horse, and they wanted to get in it. And in the commotion, the men that come round to keep order, you know, with half a dozen men and a petty officer, they said, "What's the matter here?" And they took the officer's side. And they took the officer's side, and they took my two mates back to the ship, and they was charged.
And they hadn't done anything?
They hadn't done anything. And it was these drunken officers that caused all that trouble. That's one thing about the officers.
Well, Mr. Gearing, thank you very much indeed for telling me so many of your very interesting experiences of both World Wars.
Yeah, well, anyhow.